everybody. I'm Karen Hartglass. You're listening to It's All About Food. Thank you for joining me today. I am with Talia Pollock, who has a new cookbook out called Party in Your Plants. She's a writer, speaker, plant-based chef, and she studied with the National Gourmet Institute. She's a TV personality and a health and empowerment coach with her education from the Institute of Integrative Nutrition. Sounds like a lot of activity in our wonderful city of New York.
Yes.
And I'm imagining are you in Manhattan right now?
I'm not right now. Thankfully, we actually bought a house right outside the city in Pound Ridge in October. Oh, wow. So we did not know how, you know, blessed that the timing would be of that, but we are in our woods safe and sound right now. So we feel very fortunate.
Well, that was a smart move. We've been thinking about moving for a long time. We're in Forest Hills, Queens, the epicenter of this pandemic, Queens.
Wow.
It's quite surreal. And we're realizing where our priorities should be for the next pandemic.
You know, yeah. And that's what I think everyone's doing right now is this is, if there's anything remotely positive-ish, it's that we all can focus on what really matters right now.
Yeah. It's time to reflect and hopefully reset. That's
yes. I like that.
Reset on a good path.
Yes.
Okay, so your book was released a few days ago, April 21st. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Now, this is a pre-recorded interview, so the dates may not be in sync for when people are listening to it, but I always like to say there is no time.
Literally right now, I don't know what day today is. So
exactly,
is
no one
no
does.
Time.
My big decision today was, should I get out of my pajamas and into my day pajamas?
Right. Yeah. I mean, I'm running out of like clean yoga pants.
Well, there's another subject. I mean, I want to talk about food, but since we live in an apartment building, we have been hand washing. I won't go into our laundry room downstairs. God. I mean, I know there's been recommendations, but I don't trust anybody.
No, I don't blame you.
So it's been major hand laundry here.
Wow.
And it's manageable. It just takes planning.
Yeah.
Just like food prep takes
nice,
planning,
nice right? transition. Smooth.
Yes. And I never realized that plan was in the word plan. So thanks for pointing that out.
You can't have a plant party without a plan.
Very good. As I said, your book was released on April 21st. I just want to mention that the following day, yesterday, was Earth Day and my birthday.
You and Earth shared the same birthday. That's great.
We do. We have a special relationship, me and the Earth. And me and my partner, Gary, we had a major party here. So definitely big party in your plants day yesterday.
Nice.
Here at what I like to call Responsible Eating and Living Pandemic Headquarters. That's our nonprofit, Responsible Eating and Living. What really made a difference was doing my hair.
Nice. Makes a big difference. A little mascara.
And I put on the makeup. I didn't do that today. And I put on a nice outfit. And that really started the festivities.
It
was a shift because it's very easy for many of us, especially now when we're in this lockdown mode, to feel the funk.
Oh, yeah.
So this is an interesting time for your book to be released. I don't know if you were planning
you're
a big
telling
tour
me that.
Or not.
Oh. I was definitely planning some fun stuff. I actually was on Good Morning America last week from my kitchen. My husband filmed it on our iPad. So that was an interesting Good Morning America debut. But, you know, that's where we're living
okay,
right
good.
Now. So.
Right. So you're shifting from the real tour to the virtual tour.
Yes.
And so that's why I mentioned when we had our event at home yesterday, how it's important to make an effort in order to lift your spirits.
Yeah.
So let's talk about partying your plants during a pandemic.
Great. I should have written like a chapter on that had I known, because the book is organized, as you know, by real life situations.
Exactly.
Like when you're going to a potluck or like when you're having a dinner party or game night, I wish I had put when you're quarantined.
Okay. Well, there could be a special extra.
Yeah. Maybe
that
like
you
a
put on your website
ebook,
or something.
Yeah.
There you go. Party in your plants in a pandemic.
Yes.
Because there will be another one if we ever get through this one.
Maybe, probably.
I just highlighted a couple of recipes that I thought would be fun to talk about. I like the cheese isn'ts.
Yeah, so fun.
You want to talk about that, how that happened?
Oh, well, I mean, I need to remember all the ingredients in it. But
okay, they look like Cheez-Its.
Yeah, okay. So they're basically Cheez-Its.
Right, they're little square crackers. Right.
Because their cheese isn't.
Yeah, that was really cute. They look good. They look like Cheez-Its.
They're really yummy. It's funny because when I was writing the book, I thought I was going to call them cheese knots. Mm-hmm. And so we were testing and I had my whole like photo crew there and I was like, someone's like, why is it cheese knots? I'm like, well, because it's not Cheez-Its. And they're like, not is not the opposite of it. I'm like, what's the opposite of it? They're like, isn't.
Isn't.
Yeah. I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, correct. Cheese isn't is a better cheese knots. Title, I think, because cheese knot, if you don't say it right, it's not going to sound good.
I didn't think about that.
I'm not even going to say what it could sound like, but yeah. You can imagine.
Yes.
The other one was kale mint chocolate chip ice cream.
Oh, that's a dream. That's
and,
a really good
and
dream.
I'm thinking it has a beautiful green to it.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
And when you see other green ice creams, like the pistachio ice creams out there, that's not naturally green.
Right. This is as natural as it gets. It's kale. I mean, you're basically making like a really creamy smoothie with that mm-hmm. recipe with cashews and almond milk and kale, and then you're freezing it. And what's great is a lot of vegan dairy-free ice cream recipes require an ice cream maker. Who just has ice cream makers sitting around? You know, like, but this, you do. All right. Well, fine. I used to, but then we moved to New York and I ditched it because, you know, space priorities. But this you can make like in a bread loaf pan, you know, and just put it in your freezer. So you don't need a fancy schmancy ice cream maker. So
right. Very good. You begin the book talking about you don't need a blender, but you do need a blender. And I get it. I remember it took a long time before I got a Vitamix. And I love my Vitamix. But I was really resisting because I didn't want to make recipes where people needed to make investments, financial investments. Mm. I love technology, but I also, I don't know, I like simple. Yeah. And I thought, you know, I can make anything in a regular cheap blender. And I did make a lot of things, but you can do so much more with a high-powered blender, period.
It's true. It's true.
Well, save that's it also- and get it.
Yeah. I mean, I used my savings from my first job at Cold Stone Creamery, ironic. You know, that tip jar was money because every time they'd tip us, we'd sing. So we made lots of tips. And I pooled all that money in a sock drawer. And when I was ready for my Vitamix, I didn't know what I was saving it for, but I'm like, this is special money. This is my singing Cold Stone tip money. And I bought my first Vitamix, my only Vitamix. I've had it for over 10 years.
Ours, we've had a long time. It lasts. And it was a restored Vitamix. It wasn't even a brand new one.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. It's a good
thrifty.
One.
Nice.
Well, yeah. Let's talk about a little somewhat serious subject, digestive issues, which is something you experienced. And I think you found many other people experience digestive issues. And it's probably one of the main reasons, if not the main reason, that make people look for a better way of eating.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. I mean, I think most people struggle with digestive issues. And the truth is that our gut is our second brain, they say. And so our gut issues affect everything. They affect our mood. They affect our immunity. They affect our energy, our vibrance, our confidence and our happiness. Like the whole thing really can be traced really to the health of our gut. And so I struggled with my gut for most of my life. And it sucked. And I would walk around the world just not feeling remotely close to what I knew had to be my best self. I was so sick every time I'd eat, every time I didn't eat, bloated, immunity issues, which then led to, no confidence and depression. And I was just like so far from any ideal version of myself. And I tried everything. I saw multiple gastroenterologists, naturopathic doctors, nutritionists, acupuncturists, hypnotherapists, everything. And the most I could get was IBS, which like is basically a life sentence. Go have fun. Good luck. Godspeed. We understand your stomach hurts. We don't know why. We don't really have anything to fix it, but like, good luck. And I didn't think that was good enough because I felt sick all the time. And so I never gave up. And eventually I was led to this creamy vegan smoothie at a restaurant in LA, in Santa Monica, called Planet Raw, which is no longer with us. I drank this smoothie on a whim, and it was the first time in over 8 years I consumed something that not only didn't make me feel bad, but actually made me feel energized and strong and healthy. And I was like, what is this? I go back into the restaurant, they're like, it's vegan. I don't know what vegan means. So I proceeded to just sit in Barnes and Noble because there were no blogs. There was no Facebook really. Mm-hmm. There was, I mean, a little, no Instagram, and just learn all about what vegan was and what plant eating was. And that's what really led me on this journey. And I think that having that constant digestive awareness really helps me prioritize what I put into my body. So I feel my best all the time.
Like I said earlier, this is a good time for everyone to reflect and reset, especially when it comes to food.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people willy-nilly food into their body, and they don't understand that what they're consuming affects them on so many levels. And I'm here to help people stop willy-nillying.
You've made up a lot of words in this cookbook, willy-nilly. You
know, there we go. What I'm good for.
Who's your audience? Who do you see this cookbook is for?
I call it like the, it's like now this is what I call cooking. Like, remember the Now CDs that were just like the pop hits? That's what I aspire to be, like, very just for like the normal everyday person who goes to regular grocery stores and buys food. You know, I'm not trying to encourage going to niche wellness grocery stores. I want people that would go to a regular grocery store and get Hostess cupcakes, maybe also grab kale.
Cool. Okay. I'm just thinking about grocery stores right now. So we're in such a different dynamic right now. Going to a grocery store is a whole nother situation. I don't know where you're getting your food. Fortunately, we can still get food delivered here. I have not ventured to a grocery store in over a month.
Oh, wow. Yeah, we go. We put on a mask and gloves, and it's eerie and terrifying and stressful and horrible.
Yes. Where were you going to go on your book tour?
Well, I was going to do an awesome party in Williamsburg because we just moved out of Williamsburg, actually. So I was going to do that, and I was going to go to LA where this whole thing started, and meander through the country where I could get on morning TV shows and stuff like that. But, you know, we'll see what happens in the future. Right. I'm enjoying being in my sweats. So
there are some benefits to this, actually. Yeah. It's a good time to plan your life for those of us who are at home, because, of course, there are the frontliners, the healthcare workers and the delivery people and the people that are really doing some incredible work while we're all
absolutely
trying to obey this order for the world. This is not a selfish act. This is a community act where we don't want to spread the virus, but it's a good opportunity for those of us who are at home who might have more time than normal to really get our priorities in order and rethink our food choices.
Definitely.
So we feel better.
Yeah.
And we get that bonus of being stronger against the coronavirus.
I mean, yeah, it's not a coincidence that eating more plants improves your immunity. That's sweet.
Yeah, that's sweet.
Might want to consider that.
And it's delicious. And everything in your book looks really yummy.
Thanks. It is. It's very good. I'm like cooking my way through it again. I kind of got burnt out on all this food, you know, after testing it forever. And then the photo shoot was crazy. We did it in 2 weeks in our Brooklyn apartment. And we were cooking like 5 recipes a day and shoving all the leftovers in like Ziploc baggies. And I paid for all the groceries. I didn't want to waste it all. So I was just sitting there shoving like pasta salad out of a Ziploc bag in my mouth. And I just got so burnt out on this food. So I'm like recooking my way through the book. And every time I make something, I'm like, oh my God, this is so good. Not to toot my own horn too much, but damn.
Absolutely. That's really fun when you revisit your own recipes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, Talia, thanks for joining me today on It's All About Food. And I really wish you a lot of luck with partying your plants.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
All the best to you. Be
Thank
well,
you.
Be strong.
You too.
My next guest is Robbie Barbero.
He is the team, along with Cyrus Cambada, behind MasteringDiabetes.org. Have you heard about this? It's an online coaching platform for people living with all forms of diabetes that focus on low-fat, plant-based, whole food nutrition. And Robbie has been living with type 1 diabetes since 2000. He has a master's degree in public health and spent 6 years helping build the revolutionary Forks Over Knives empire. And he and Kambada have been featured in media outlets such as NPR, CNBC, Healthline, Vice, Fast Company, Wired, KQED, and Plant Based News. And right now I've got Robbie here to talk to me about their new book called Mastering Diabetes. And welcome.
I'm really excited to be here. Thank you so much. It's a really exciting time. I mean, our book became a New York Times bestseller, which was really exciting.
Oh, that's very good news.
We're really happy to get this out to the people who need this information.
It's an exciting time. That's an interesting way to put it. It's kind of a surreal, crazy time right now. Where are you located?
I live in Santa Monica, California.
This is audio, but I'm looking at you and you've got that groovy, sun-kissed kind of vibe going on.
Hey, we're very lucky here that we can go outside year-round and still move our bodies amidst all this craziness.
Yeah, I'm in the epicenter in Queens, New York.
Wow. Well, you're right. Exciting is probably not the right word to describe what's happening with COVID-19. But I think it's an interesting opportunity for people to learn the importance of addressing underlying health conditions that we actually know we can reverse. So hypertension is the biggest issue right now when it comes to complications, and diabetes is high on the list. And I can promise you, Mastering Diabetes Method addresses both of those.
It's more important than ever. It's been very frustrating for me. I've been promoting a healthy plant-based diet for a very long time, and knowing that there are so many chronic diseases we can reverse, we can prevent, and yet it's taking such a long time for the medical establishment to get on board with this. But now more than ever with COVID-19, where many chronic diseases are given a back burner in terms of treatment in the areas where we're having such an overwhelming response to the virus, it's more important for people to get into this program and get healthy.
I think you're exactly right. And statistically, we know more and more people will become, will be living with COVID-19. It's going to happen statistically. So the question becomes, what are you going to do today to reduce your chances of complications, to reduce your chances of having to go to the hospital? You get to do that. You get to take control of your health.
I've said many times that I think it's easy to move to a healthy plant-based diet, and it's not always easy. I acknowledge that.
It's simple to understand. The nuances in our current environment make it challenging.
But your book helps people get through it because it's so detailed. I read the book, I've read other books like Joel Fuhrman's The End of Diabetes and Dr. Neil Barnard's books on preventing diabetes. And this is different in that you give a firsthand voice to actually figuring out what you need to do with this disease for all the types. I don't know what it's like to have diabetes, especially when you're insulin dependent and you have to inject yourself all the time and the things that you need to do day in and day out, testing your glucose levels and all that sounds very, very complicated. But you give people precise information about what to do to transform to a better place.
Well, it really means a lot for you to put our book in that category. And obviously, when we put together a book proposal and pitched it to publishers, and luckily got signed by Avery, Penguin Random House, they really believed in what we had to say and that this message is unique and a little bit different than what has already been put out there. And I think one of the keys here is that it's very easy to follow. It's simple. It's simple to understand what to do. And that's what we put together. We have a simple traffic light system. We also really guide people through a step-by-step transition, which is important because overwhelm is the biggest problem when people are trying to transition. They just flat out get overwhelmed and just go back to what they knew how to do beforehand. And so a really guided step-by-step process was our goal here. And we've had incredible feedback, incredible success stories from the book itself. And it really means a lot. So thank you.
You're welcome. I just hope more people read it and follow it and get better. Because why not? We're all
here. Yeah, why not? We have over 110 million people in the US alone, majority of them living with pre-diabetes and type 2 diabetes, and those conditions can be reversed. So I'm with you, Karen. Let's get as many people as possible reading the book.
Well, unfortunately, the scary thing with pre-diabetes is that most people think it's normal and that they have nothing to worry about. Right. Whereas it's like a red light alarm. Get better now.
It's the best wake-up call you could ever ask for. Because when you're in the pre-diabetes state, it's pretty benign. Not too much has happened yet. And you can use this as a wake-up call to objectively improve your health. That's one of the things I love about diabetes, is how it's such an objective condition where you can see moment by moment, meal by meal, how are your decisions impacting your current health, your short-term health, and your long-term health, long-term chronic disease risk. And so measuring your blood glucose values is a great insight. And nowadays we have continuous glucose monitors, which are becoming much more widely available. You get to see your blood glucose data throughout the entire day. Every 5 minutes, you'll see a reading on your phone. So it's really an opportunity. I love how you see it that way too.
I've been doing this a long time, preaching the benefits of a whole food plant-based diet. I'm vegan for 32 years. I have a background in chemical engineering, master's in chemical engineering. I worked in the semiconductor industry a long time ago. But one of my favorite things to do is collect data. And when you collect data, sometimes from the most mundane, seemingly understood processes, you discover things. And in your book, you talk about collecting data and how important it is. And I appreciated that.
You would have a lot of fun living with type 1 diabetes. It's a lot of data. It's a lot of math. It's a lot of calculations. But yes, I appreciate you saying that. And the Mastering Diabetes method has four components. It's low-fat, plant-based, whole food nutrition is number one. Intermittent fasting is number two. Daily movement is number three. And then number four is daily documentation through our creation of a thing called a decision tree. And you are exactly right. When you write down that data, when you put down that information, things start to make sense. Light bulbs start to go off in your brain like, oh, it was that peanut butter that I had last night that my fasting blood glucose was now 20 points higher than the night when I didn't have the peanut butter snack. Maybe what these guys are saying about fat being the cause of insulin resistance, maybe there's something there. I actually see it and feel it in my own body. So the data is important.
Okay, there's a couple of things, more than a couple of things I want to touch on that I like in the book. This isn't in the order I had picked, but since you mentioned peanut butter, let's just underline this again, this concept that it's fat that makes the big difference in causing insulin resistance and not sugar. And then we'll talk about the word sugar.
Yes. So this is the crux of the issue when it comes to diabetes and insulin resistance and what we can do to take full control of our health. And what happens here is you will see a lot of low carbohydrate experts, a lot of mainstream experts saying that it's sugar that causes insulin resistance, that it is processed carbohydrates that cause insulin resistance. And they're really blaming, they're trying to blame a poor food environment. We do have a poor food environment. People are eating a lot of processed carbohydrates. This is true. But what they are unfortunately missing is that what's really the problem is the excess dietary fat, particularly saturated fat, but in general, all fat in general, even if it's coming from oils or avocados or nuts and seeds, it doesn't matter. Excess dietary fat ends up accumulating inside muscle and liver cells. Muscle and liver cells are not supposed to accumulate excess fat. They're supposed to have small amounts of fat. And adipose tissue is supposed to have a larger amount of fat. That's where it's supposed to go. When your muscle and liver cells have excess dietary fat, that prevents insulin from functioning properly. Insulin's job is to usher glucose out of your bloodstream into your cells. And the simple way to think about it is insulin is the key, and it opens up the lock, and then glucose can come into the door. But if you have excess fat gumming up that lock, insulin can't work properly. And now you have pre-diabetes and type 2 diabetes characterized by high blood glucose values and high insulin levels. That is pathological insulin resistance right there. And the, again, the core issue there is dietary fat. Now, in this book, we have over 800 peer-reviewed citations. We go through almost 100 years of evidence-based research demonstrating what is known about reversing insulin resistance. And the fun part here is that we have a plethora of research showing that even when you consume processed carbohydrates in a low-fat environment, you see an improvement in insulin sensitivity, a marked improvement in insulin sensitivity. No questions asked, improvement in insulin sensitivity. And when I say processed foods, we can go back to Walter Kempner in the 1950s. These are patients that were fed white rice, fruit juice, and table sugar, four ingredients. And these people reversed diabetes in several cases and saw an improvement in insulin sensitivity. That was a paper published in 1958, 100 consecutive diabetes patients, no cherry picking. Then we can go to 1971, Dr. Brunzell, New England Journal of Medicine. He does a study comparing a 40% of calories from fat diet to a sugar water diet. Literally 85% of calories coming from carbohydrate in the form of dextrose, 15% of calories coming from protein in the form of protein powder. Zero fat. The only way you can design a zero fat diet is if you have a processed diet, because all whole foods contain fat. So he compares this sugar water diet to a standard 40% of calories from fat diet. He does an oral glucose tolerance test. That's where you consume 75 grams of glucose. Then you have your blood glucose values tested every 30 minutes and your insulin levels tested every 30 minutes. So the people consuming a sugar water diet, you would think they would see an increase in their insulin levels and an increase in their blood glucose values. The exact opposite happened across the board. Every single point in the oral glucose tolerance test, insulin levels dropped, blood glucose levels dropped, showing a clear improvement in insulin sensitivity. And then you can look at plenty of research where humans were fed this low-fat plant-based whole food diet and they reversed the condition. It's pretty clear when you get to look at the research. And again, these are all diets where there was a maximum of 15% of calories coming from fat. That's the threshold for low-fat nutrition. Whereas in the low-carbohydrate world, you'll hear them say, oh, we conducted a research study and the low-carbohydrate diet outperformed the low-fat diet, but they didn't actually do a low-fat diet.
It's unbelievable that we're here today and more people don't have this information, but we move forward.
Yes.
And part of the problem is the language that we use. Many people confuse refined carbohydrates with complex carbohydrates. It happens over and over again every time I read an article. It's like, why don't you say complex here? Why don't you say refined here? They're not the same.
Yes.
You point out that you compare monosaccharides versus refined sugar. Can you talk about those words?
I mean, basically, here's the takeaway point here. I want to keep this really basic and over general for everybody here. The takeaway point is that, like you said, people are confusing. You'll see all over the internet, books, New York Times bestsellers, all these great doctors literally saying that the sugar in fruit is the same as table sugar. They're saying when you eat potatoes, it turns to sugar. Sugar is sugar, sugar is sugar. This is so far from the truth. It's so far from the truth. And the biggest point here is that when you're having something like bananas or mangoes or potatoes or quinoa, these are whole foods. They contain fiber. They contain large amounts of water content. They contain vitamins, minerals, antioxidants, phytochemicals. It's this complex interaction of all these nutrients, the ones that we've discovered and the ones that we haven't discovered. Phytochemicals, this is brand new science. They've identified 8,000 of them, so there's many more they haven't identified. And even of the 8,000, they've only studied a couple hundred. And of the couple hundred that they have studied, they find nothing but remarkable outcomes when people consume more of them. So it's these nutrients that, again, we're studying them in isolation. We're trying to figure out, oh, this does this, this phytochemical does this. But what we sometimes forget is the complex interaction. You have trillions of cells in your body doing we cannot count the number of actions that are happening every moment of every day. And so when you consume the whole food, you are then experiencing steady blood glucose fluctuations. So what you want, again, when you get somebody restored to a healthy level of insulin sensitivity, when you eat foods like fruits, you know, bananas, apples, pears, peaches, you are supposed to experience a slight blood glucose elevation. Maybe you go up to 120, 130, 140, and then it comes right back down. This is normal, healthy human physiology. And this happens when you're eating whole foods with all the vitamins, all the minerals interacting in this way we never even will ever understand. And you're doing that in a low-fat environment. So Cyrus and I, being people living with type 1 diabetes, what we have learned over time is that we are fantastic test subjects because we know exactly how much insulin we're injecting. We know how many grams of carbohydrate we're consuming because we're calculating that data like you love so much. And we are measuring our blood glucose values consistently. If people are pricking themselves, maybe they're doing it 6, 8, 10 times a day. If you're wearing a continuous glucose monitor like myself, you have a 24-hour profile. And so this data allows us to see what is causing our blood glucose values to either be steady or be incredibly variable. What's causing these frustrating fluctuations? And so we understand, and we can see, again, we've had an opportunity to work with over 3,000 people living with all forms of diabetes, hundreds of type 1s. And you can see consistently, repeatedly, that when people consume these higher carbohydrate foods and you consume fat, either in the same meal or higher fat meals, at any point within the past 48 hours, that makes it challenging to control your blood glucose. That ends up resulting in very high elevated readings. We're talking 180, 200, 250, 300 if you really screw up. And so we can see this clearly in our own personal experience with clients, and also it's corroborated by the peer-reviewed research. But all that to say that sugar is really, the phrase is incorrect, because it's glucose that you're finding inside these foods. It's fructose. And again, fructose has a bad name because of high fructose corn syrup, but fructose found in whole foods consumed in a low-fat environment is healthy. It's, you want that fructose. You're not trying to avoid that. You want that. So it's really, unfortunately, a lot of confusion when it comes to the word sugar. And so which we're talking about sugar. We're talking about white table sugar. We're talking about, you know, processed sugars or like brown sugar, stuff like that. That's sugar. What we're talking about in the whole foods is completely different, and the way it metabolizes is completely different. And it's actually truly the solution to insulin resistance, to eat more of these high carbohydrate foods in a low fat environment.
Beautiful. I've come to this program, and much of my philosophy is based on not wanting to harm animals. That's how I started on my vegetarian and vegan path. I didn't believe in killing animals. And then there were the benefits of health and the environment and everything. Okay. I was curious when you started talking about MAP, the Mycobacterium avium parotuberculosis, MAP. Yes. Can you talk about that and why we don't want to consume animals?
Okay, so I also initially got started with this through the movie Earthlings. Have you seen Earthlings?
Sure.
That was the movie that actually opened up my eyes to say, wait a minute. I was a freshman at the University of Florida when I saw that movie. And I'm like, I'm a smart dude. I worked very hard. I was top of my class to get into this university. and I have no idea where my food is coming from. And it was, I was mind, I was like, wait a minute. So the people who had suggested that I watch that movie, I was like, okay, wait a minute. I'm going to go listen to what you have to suggest when it comes to nutrition. I mean, I clearly don't know anything. I don't even know where my food comes from. I don't even know how it got on my plate. That was my mind opening to me. So this MAP here, all right, MAP is, a lot of researchers believe that this could be a causative effect when it comes to autoimmune conditions. So type 1 diabetes is classified as an autoimmune condition. MAP here, it's something that is really, we say in the book, it's unsavory, all right? And it infects the gastrointestinal tract of industrialized cows, all right? And it's causing a fatal condition known as Jones disease. So this bacteria lives in the intestine of cows, is also present in fecal matter of infected cows. So, which means that it can easily be passed between animals and those who are exposed to the fecal material. So there's a common occurrence when hundreds of thousands of cows are living together in close quarters. It's common that in these large industrialized farms. And under that condition, MAP can be present in the intestines and fecal matter of livestock, which poses no threat to human health, assuming that their intestines were removed after slaughter and their fecal matter remained separated from the slaughterhouse. However, that's not what happens, okay? When animals are slaughtered, fecal residue from the soil ends up clinging to the boots, clothes, and gloves of slaughterhouse workers, which can then cross-contaminate the carcass of the animals, contaminating both milk and the meat products en route to the grocery store. So that's how this really nasty substance can end up getting into the animal products that people consume. So a study published in 2007 revealed that more than 68% of all U.S. dairy operations have housed cows infected with MAP, and that more than 95% of farms containing more than 500 cows housed animals infected with MAP. So we know that this is problematic. We know that they are infected with it, and we know that cross-contamination can happen. And this can then impact the development of autoimmune conditions such as type 1 diabetes. So it can be present in the meat you buy, whether it's from the butcher, and it's like beef, pork, chicken, organ tissues, it can be present. And basically, there's actually research showing that 15 to 20% of commonly eaten meat products test positive for MAP DNA, and that ground beef presents the greatest risk for transporting MAP into the human food chain. There was also an investigation of 298 children in Sardinia, Italy, and they found that before the age of 2 years old, they developed type 1 diabetes, and that there was a high meat consumption. There's a high meat consumption. So Sardinia, Italy has a very high rate of type 1, and there's a concern that there's a connection there between the amount of meat being consumed and the levels of type 1 diabetes.
Just one more reason to keep animals off your plate.
Absolutely.
Yes. Robbie Barbero, thank you for joining me. I know you have to run and do probably a million other interviews today.
It's really a fun day, a fun opportunity to spread the message of this book. But I really hope that your audience picks up a copy if they're living with diabetes, or if they have a loved one, or they have a friend. It's a great gift. It's an easy read, backed by science, but easy to understand. The book has 30 brand new recipes, two 21-day meal plans. And again, it's very simple. That's the key thing that we have made sure to focus on in our coaching program, in the materials that we put out, is that it's simple and people can gain confidence when implementing these method, the Mastering Diabetes method. And they can get this book anywhere. It's on Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble. Cyrus and I read our own audiobook, which was super fun. We added extra material at the beginning of each chapter. You can get that on Audible or anywhere you listen to audiobooks. We have a ebook version, whether that's Kindle or Nook or any of your favorite ebook platforms. the book's available. It's everywhere. And I really hope that people benefit from it.
I think it's a great gift too for your primary care physicians and your favorite nurses and healthcare providers, because they're suffering too and they don't know. Many of them don't know this.
This is a great book because of the evidence-based nature. I mean, this is not our opinion. This is not just our personal experience. Our experience happens to be in alignment with almost 100 years of evidence-based research. And you have success story after success story in this book and on our website. So you're exactly right. It's a great gift for the medical community who is really questioning whether or not people can eat high carbohydrate foods and reverse insulin resistance. The answer is in this book.
Okay, thank you. And thank you to Cyrus Cambada, Robbie Barbero, authors of Mastering Diabetes. Take care, be strong.
Well, I enjoyed those last two interviews with Talia Pollock, the author of Party in Your Plants, and
Robbie Barbero,
who is the co-author of Mastering Diabetes. I hope you enjoyed them as much as I did. And now to wrap up the rest of this program, guess who's with me? Gary DiMattei.
Hi, Karen. Hi, everybody. It's great to be back. How you doing, Karen?
Well, it's been an interesting week here at Responsible Eating and Living headquarters in quarantine.
Yes.
And we celebrated my birthday. I mentioned that earlier in the program.
I remember hearing that.
But I wanted to thank you because you made it really special for me.
Oh, Karen.
Yeah, you made an incredible dinner. And I'm so lucky to have you.
Thank
to do
you.
That for me.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Thank you so much.
So one of the things that he made was...
Well, wait. Now let's start the day with what you made for
I
your
made myself
birthday
a cake.
Breakfast.
Oh, I made pancakes.
Yeah, I mean, if we're going to give credit where credit is due, let's start with the morning meal. We had these fabulous pancakes.
Yeah, so I'm always trying to improve on the recipes that we create and post at Responsible Eating and Living for free. And we have something called late night corn pancakes.
Late night corn pancakes can now be called late night corn.
Quarantine pancakes.
Late night quarantine pancakes.
Yes. Well, I've changed it around a little bit. I've noted it on the recipe in terms of an update because I'm trying to get away from using these all-purpose gluten-free mixes. And I want to use all whole grains that I grind myself.
Yeah, you want to make your own gluten-free flour.
And I whipped it up with some awesome aquafaba.
Literally.
The bean water. Literally whipped.
You literally whipped it up. You got that aquafaba to just get those soft peaks, bordering on stiff peaks. I mean, it was amazing.
Yeah,
I thought,
really good.
These were souffle pancakes. These were amazing. And it's all in your blog. You started your blog just for this birthday.
Yes, I did a blog post for the birthday.
Should I say you restarted your blog?
Well, it never ended.
Officially, no.
Officially, I stopped doing it every day.
But this was great. I mean, this blog is definitely something
y'all should... Yeah, there's a couple of videos that we took that you might enjoy watching.
Starting with the pancakes.
With the pancakes, yeah.
Okay, but anyway, so then what else did you make?
Well, the night before I made myself a little birthday cake, a mini birthday cake, which we had on my birthday. And I also posted the recipe for that. And I have to say, I'm really pleased with it.
Again, you made your own flour mix, your own gluten-free flour mix. And it was moist and it was really good. It was great chocolate cake. Well, I mean, you tell them what kind of cake it was.
So it's a chocolate cake, but the secret ingredient is pumpkin puree. So I call it a chocolate pumpkin cake, but you don't really taste the pumpkin. But what it does is it acts like a binder and provides moisture.
Yeah, totally. It wasn't dry at all.
Yeah.
It was terrific. It was a great cake. And it looked like, and you had two icings on it. One was a ganache that was thick so that you could spread it and make the filling for the layer. And then the other one was a poured ganache.
Okay, so let's be transparent here.
All right, all transparency here.
All transparency. So when you're making a recipe or creating a recipe or just in the kitchen cooking, you don't always have success.
No.
And I made this chocolate sauce, a recipe we came up with years ago, for chocolate fondue, right? For Halloween. And I remembered back then that when we finished it up and finished videoing our Gomez and Morticia food show.
Yeah, we did a video, a Halloween video, where we made a bunch of really wonderful, fun treats and things. And two of the items were fondues. One was a savory fondue and one was a chocolate fondue.
Right. Well, when we put the remaining fondue in the refrigerator the next day, it was a firm chocolate, like a ganache that you could frost the cake with. And I thought, oh, this recipe, it's a chocolate sauce. No, it's a frosting.
Right. If you put it in the fridge, it gets nice and
But what I didn't firm. Realize at the time was we had it cooking, or it kept, it was warm in the fondue pot, so it was evaporating and thickening. So right. When I went to make this cake, I thought, I'll make that ganache. But when I made it and I left it in the refrigerator, it never firmed up because I didn't cook the liquid off
and
of it.
Some chocolate experts would call that tempering the chocolate. And what it did when it was in the fondue pot naturally was it tempered itself naturally. We kept stirring it. The heat went down and then the heat came up and the heat went down. And those of you out there who work with chocolate know that if you temper the chocolate, it starts to stabilize. And when it chills, it gets like a truffle. I mean, it really is wonderful. That's kind of what we did without really realizing what we were doing. We were tempering the chocolate.
Okay, so I made this ganache, which I thought I would be able to frost on the cake, and it was too thin.
It was too thin because it didn't temper.
So right. I poured it over the cake anyway.
Right.
And then I put it in the refrigerator.
It was just extra good.
And then I made more ganache, only I used less water so that it would be thick.
And then you frosted it again?
And then I frosted it. And this way I could put it between the layers, and the thicker frosting had enough heft to it to hold up the layers up, so there would be a layer of frosting in the middle, because when it was too thin, the two layers sat right on top of each other.
And
okay.
Then you poured a third layer of chocolate over it, and it dripped down, and it looked like this fabulous chocolate candle.
It was incredible. A chocolate candle.
It did.
But the point is, we made lemonade or chocolate ganache out of a mistake.
Right. It was fabulous, and the cake was delicious. And then the recipe is now up at Responsible Eating and Living.
Yeah. We also added a coconut whipped cream. And nice. I added a little of the pumpkin puree in it, so it gave it a nice rosy color.
Right.
It was very nice. Now, I have to make a disclaimer here. This was not a healthy food. This was a once in the year, once in a decade. I don't know. This was a major treat.
We really haven't had a chocolate cake around here in a long time.
Yep. It was good, though.
But when you're in quarantine, once in a while, you go a little crazy.
Yeah. So can I now talk about what you made for dinner?
Oh, dinner. Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Back in December, we catered a dinner as a fundraiser for the theater company we work with out in California.
Right. It was an auction item. We gave an auction item and we said that
we auctioned ourselves to make dinner.
That the swinging gourmets would come over to your house and make you dinner for 10 of your favorite people, 10 of your favorite friends and family members.
So we made this wonderful food and we served it to everyone, and we never really got to sit down and enjoy it.
No.
So I said, I want what we made for that group for my birthday. And the main dish was what we call a chicken fried tofu. So it's a marinated tofu that
we bake first. We slice it up and we bake it in the oven. We just want to marinate it so that we get the flavor in there and put it in the oven so it has a nice baked tofu taste, you know, with whatever the marinade is. And then we take it out, we let it get down to room temperature, and then we wrap it
with the skin.
Rice paper.
We use rice paper. Have you ever used rice paper to make a spring roll or something like that? Rice paper comes in these very super thin sheets. They're hard, they're dry, and they'll crack very easily because they're so thin. But you put them in a little dish of water, and right away they soften up. And I wrapped the tofu in them, and then we dredged them in a little seasoned cashew milk.
Little seasoned cashew milk, and then we dredged them in some of your flour mix.
Yeah.
Only your flour mix was oats and corn?
Oats and corn. Seasoned oats and corn.
For the pancakes, right? Mm-hmm. But not for the cake.
The cake was steel-cut oats and millet, and a little garbanzo bean flour.
So I used the same dredgings flour for the that you had for the pancakes. I used it for the dredging of the tofu wrapped in rice paper.
And then it gets baked again.
And it's a seasoned thing. And now then, again, this is
this is decadent.
This is your once-a-year thing. We fried it. Right. In a little oil.
Mm-hmm.
Oil.
Oil.
Yeah, this is not something you want to do every day. But then, like I said, it was a special occasion. It was your birthday, and we were going rich. We were going all the bad foods.
The theme was rich.
Yeah. No. And then I made a nice, as you would call it, a goyishum gravy. Right. Explain to everyone what that is.
Okay. Well.
Well, it's gravy. Like, you know, if you have biscuits and gravy. Or,
yeah.
Fried chicken and biscuits.
A gravy,
and
gravy that has flour in it to thicken it.
Yeah, only this didn't have flour in it. This was this had millet in it.
Okay, well, millet's a grain.
Ground millet flour. Yeah,
there you go.
So this is flour.
It didn't have wheat flour. It had millet flour.
Are you guys following this, or are we just putting you to sleep? Anyway, it's all in Karen's blog, and so are the recipes.
Okay, it was served on a big pile of mashed potatoes and collards. So the collards were the winning.
It was a collard kale mix.
Collard kale mix, yes, greens.
Yeah,
it was really
smoky
good.
Flavored, like we put some sort of bacon.
It had pork in it or something. But no, it was smoky paprika, right?
It was just my invention of how to make it taste nice and smoky.
It was a winner, indeed.
Yeah, the dinner was good. Smothered in that gravy, crispy tofu with actual skin over it. Lots of collards sautéed and with kale. Yeah, it was a great birthday dinner.
I don't know
how we're going to top that for my birthday in May, but we're going to try.
Well, you just tell me what you want and I'll make it.
We'll make it together like we made your birthday
together.
Okay,
that sounds good.
Hopefully we won't be in quarantine.
So here's the update. I've ordered and received nigari.
Nigari!
Yes, which is what is used to coagulate soy milk to make tofu.
So we're going to make our own tofu.
We're moving in that direction. I mentioned it a week ago or 2 weeks ago.
We're
waiting for the soybeans to arrive.
We watched a video on Miyoko's Facebook page.
Yes.
And she's there working away during the quarantine, making videos for everybody.
Yeah, it's lovely.
Really wonderful.
But I can't wait to make it, and we'll let you know how it goes.
Right. And all of you out there, I hope you're doing well. I hope you're making some wonderful creations of your own.
Yes, we're giving you permission.
And if you are, we want to know about them.
Absolutely. So we just have like a couple minutes. I wanted to mention who's listening and watching the Food Revolution Summit 2020 event that's going on all this week. So
I know someone who's working behind the scenes.
I am. It started on Saturday. Tuesday is day 4. And it will continue for 9 days. All the interviews, as usual, are wonderful. And what I'm doing during the 3 hours of interviews, where John Robbins is interviewing some expert on some food-related topic, and Ocean, his son, is kind of like the MC of the event, people are allowed to make comments on the webpage and ask questions. And I am there feverishly trying to answer as many questions about health and nutrition as I possibly can.
It's live. It's live, right?
It's live.
You're answering them live. So
yeah.
They're listening and you're answering live and you're working away.
Yeah, it's really a great event. If you haven't signed up to hear it, I hope that you do. We have a link at responsibleeatingandliving.com for the summit if you need to check it out.
And this has been
it's the ninth year.
Ninth year.
Yeah.
That you've been doing this. Wow.
Yeah. Anyway, so here we are. We've come to the end of another wonderful program.
All right, everybody. Thanks to PRN and the people at the station that are making this possible. Thanks to Gary Null. Thank you for listening. Happy birthday, Karen.
Thanks, Gary.
And go to our website and check out the blogs and all
and the cake recipe.
And the cake recipe and all of the new recipes that we have up there. And let us know what you're doing at
info@realmeals.org.
info@realmeals.org.
Sounds good. Hey, everybody.
Have a delicious week.
Thank you.